Welcome to another story-filled episode of Musings on Golf. So good to have you with us. And later on, you'll hear how you can win a dozen Titleist Pro V1 golf balls on us. My name is Kelly Elbin, and with my co-host, the voice of golf himself, Bob Bupka, we'll be joined by Damon Hack of Golf Channel. We'll also talk about the very cool and very emotional victory over the weekend by Tim O'Neill on the PGA Tour Champions. Robert, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, and doing great because, you know, always good stories come from the PGA Tour and the PGA Tour Champions, and the victory by Tim O'Neill certainly touches all of those categories. A very emotional win, his 50th attempt, and much deserved. A good guy, a good player. Now he's in the winner's circle.
Yeah, and he played on so many tours throughout the world, had come up a little bit short in a few PGA Tour Q School efforts. Soft-spoken guy, and shot 65 to win, not only to win the event in Richmond at the Dominion Energy Charity Classic, but Bob, it gets him onto the second round of the Charles Schwab Cup. They're playing this week at the Simmons Bank Championship in Arkansas. So we certainly wish him the very best. And Bob, we just came off what I thought was a terrific interview with Damon Hack of Golf Channel. You've known Damon for a long time. He made the conversion from the print world and really seamlessly, Bob, to the broadcasting world. He's really good, smooth as can be, very versatile guy, and what a likable human being.
Yeah, he really is. And, you know, he goes to UCLA. He goes to Cal Berkeley. I mean, you got to be pretty sharp to get into those institutions, and certainly being pretty sharp, nothing that Damon Hack lacks any of.
I teased a little bit this promotion that we're going to have for these Titleist golf balls. It all has to do with the story that we ask every week about a dream golf foursome, and we're going to kind of throw it to our listeners to have them enter into an opportunity. We're going to talk about more on that after we hear from our partners here on Musings on Golf, and after what we think is a terrific interview with Damon Hack, Golf Channel. Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
You flew the trap on 6. You birdied 12 and 13. You closed out the match 4 and 3. From your numbers to your windows, everything was dialed. That was yesterday. Outperform your best. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Celebrating its 30th year, the South Florida PGA Golf Pass offers the ultimate summer golf experience with special access to more than 100 private, semi-private, and public golf facilities. From May 1st through October 31st, Golf Pass members can enjoy special low rates, exclusive member-only outings, special offers, and more. For just $60, you can purchase the South Florida PGA Golf Pass and instantly gain access to all these great benefits through the member-only app. It's simple. Pay, download, play. Visit sfpgagolf.com/golfpass for more information. That's sfpgagolf.com/golfpass. Bob, it isn't every week that we're excited to have a hack join us on Musings on Golf. But when it comes to our friend Damon Hack, we're more than happy to make an exception. He's written about the NFL, the NBA, and professional golf for major publications, including Sports Illustrated and the New York Times. And since 2012, he's produced great work for the Golf Channel, both in studio and at events. He's an LA kid who I'm sure is excited to have his Dodgers back in the World Series, and he's with us today. It's always a pleasure to spend time with Damon Hack. How you doing, Damon?
Kelly, I'm great. Great to be with you and Bob. It's I am excited, a little distracted now. Usually I'm paying attention to golf 100%, but with my Dodgers about to meet the Yankees, I'm a little distracted, understandably so, though, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you should be. It's hey, this is the great battle, you know, the history of the Yankees and Dodgers, the World Series, man.
Oh, it goes back to New York and in Brooklyn, back to my dad, who grew up in Los Angeles and was a Dodger fan before me. And when I first remember watching the Dodgers and Yankees, it was like in the late 70s and early 80s when Reggie Jackson was hitting 3 home runs on 3 pitches, you know. So now Aaron Judge is that guy, and we have Shohei. It's going to be a lot of fun to see those guys doing battle.
It is going to be a lot of fun having Damon Hack with us, especially when Kelly Elbin gets to hear the following. I knew Damon Hack when he wrote for the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Damon Hack lived in East Hampton, New York, my hometown. We were buddies way back then. And one other big surprise, and Damon can back me up on it, and if it's not true, he can lie, because you never let the facts get in the way of a good story. But I think one of the first times that Damon Hack was ever on Golf Channel, it was at Jack Nicklaus's tournament. They came and got me. They said, come on, we need you on Golf Channel. You're going to do it with Damon Hack. I said, who? They said, Damon Hack. And we went on the air together. So I think one of the first times Damon Hack was ever on Golf Channel, I was at his side and proud to have been there.
Well, I was by your side, Bob. I mean, you showed me a lot of the ins and outs of the golf business. You were at every press conference. You were interviewing the players post-round. You gave me the great long and short history of Long Island, the great Ternesa family you turned me on to. I learned a lot about the golf business from you, my friend.
Well, it was an honor. And I almost knew instantly, hey, there's something special about this guy. He's going to go far. Did I ever think you were going to go so far as to do what you do on the Golf Channel, to have covered the Olympics? By the way, you really enjoyed the Olympics.
Oh, I sure did. But I just feel fortunate to have been in the business as long as I have. And you guys know that the golf course and covering majors is like the toy store of life, to be able to go to these great venues. And I've looked at sports in general in that same vein, whether I was covering the NBA playoffs or you know, the Knicks in Madison Square Garden, or covering the NFL Super Bowl and big time sports. And the Olympics is right there. I just love storytelling. I love seeing athletic greatness in different venues and endeavors, winter games, summer games. I just love a good story. I love the triumph and the tragedy of sports. And I just, I feel very blessed to have been around as long as I have.
You know, I never asked you this, Damon. I've been meaning to. What motivated the change from print journalism to TV?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was comfortable and enjoying my time at Sports Illustrated, but I noticed that a lot of my colleagues were starting to be laid off, and the advertising dollar was shrinking, especially in magazines and print in general. And at the time, I was offered a buyout. At the same time, I had begun conversations with Molly Solomon and Jeff Russell at Golf Channel. They'd seen me do probably interviews with you and here and there popping on to a news program or a sports program, you know, to talk about whatever, Tiger Woods, whatever the story was that might have transcended golf at the moment, and felt very comfortable on television for some reason. And was offered a job at the same time Sports Illustrated was offering buyouts, and it just made sense to me that the print, you know, not that I'm some, you know, genius with a crystal ball, but I could just tell that the appetite for print journalism was changing and that it was shrinking, and that it might be a good move to go to a different medium and expand my journalistic skills. And fortunate that I'd covered golf for the New York Times and Newsday and Sports Illustrated and just had a chance to tell stories in a different way. And Golf Channel was relaunching Morning Drive with a larger cast. It had been Gary Williams and Eric Casilius for a few years, and they wanted to make it more of a Today Show of golf and bring in the Holly Saunders, Lauren Thompson, Kelly Tillman for a time, Ahmad Rashad, Matt Janella. I came on board, Charlie Reimer, later Paige McKenzie, and you know, we had Jonathan Coachman for a while. It was fun to make that transition while still being able to use some reporting skills and going out to some great events. But really, it was more about a shift in the business that prompted me to make that jump to Golf Channel.
And I'm wondering about that. Looking back, being a journalist first before on the air, is that kind of a tough pill to swallow just to see sort of what that has become? What Sports Illustrated, for example, was and what it meant to so many for so long and what it is now?
Yeah, I think the attention span of human beings has changed. We consume our news and nuggets and tweets and TikToks as opposed to the 3,000-word feature that used to kind of carry the day. You know, you want to read a newspaper story and see what happened the night before, but then you'd also want to read that magazine story to get the larger perspective. Some of my favorite stories was being in a Super Bowl locker room. I covered the Steelers and the Cardinals Super Bowl. I covered the Giants and the Patriots, their second meeting in Indianapolis. And the challenge of trying to write a long-form feature in a game that everybody saw and that they'll read about the next day, and they're going to read your story 4 days later, and what can you bring that's different than what they already know? And that was a wonderful and sometimes frightening challenge. But I just think we consume the news differently. There's podcasts and there's tweets and there's just different ways. And I feel like we're so busy as a society that people don't take the time to sit down and spend a couple of hours with a magazine anymore.
Let me ask you this, Damon. Did it take long for you to become comfortable on the air? I know you're multi-talented, and I have to bow down when I see you. But did it take you long, Damon?
You know what? I'd like to say that I was fortunate to be surrounded by good people, great producers, and great cohorts like Gary Williams. Gary Williams said, Damon is very talented in his own right. Gary was like, don't read the prompter, like don't lean on the prompter. Learn to talk about golf without having to use a teleprompter. So I learned early some important tactics, secrets, pointers that could help me. But almost right away, and I don't know if it was because of it was something that I was comfortable talking about anyway, just conversing in a different way instead of with a pen and a typewriter or a computer. It was just with a red light and a camera in your face. But I felt really comfortable. I'll never forget my first week at Golf Channel. I had just come back from covering the U.S. Open at Olympic Club in San Francisco, Webb Simpson 2012. And I literally flew from San Francisco to Florida, did Tuesday through Friday. And we spent the week talking about an event I had just covered, you know, talking about how close Jim Furyk had been to a second U.S. Open. And, you know, Graham McDowell was in the mix that week, and Webb Simpson, this kid from North Carolina. I just had been writing about it and talking about it, you know, for forever. And just coming fresh off a major and going right to TV to talk about what I'd just been to, it felt natural. Now, I still get nervous. I get excited and I get the butterflies, but it means I care. I enjoy it. I'm thankful for the position. But yeah, I did feel comfortable. It never felt like, what am I doing here? I never felt afraid of the red light, and I, in fact, enjoy the pressure and the challenge of trying to convey, you know, sound bites in a succinct way.
I was just thinking, listening to you talk, when we met, okay, you had triplets, but they were about 2 or 3 years old. How old are those rascals now?
They're 13.
13? Stop it, Damon. Stop it.
Taller than my wife, and I'm next on the list to be passed up. And they love sports. It's so fun to get home from work and they're home from school and to talk about the football game or the golf tournament. They watch the majors. I've been fortunate to take them to work. I took them to Mexico this year. I covered the Vedanta Open, which Jake Knapp won, and they were there while they were mostly swimming at the pool and going to the beach. They They did come watch the golf. I've taken them to the Scottish Open overseas, and they got to see Rory McIlroy tee off. So they're just like dudes. You know, they're three 13-year-old boys who love sports and talk trash. And thankfully, they still have some sweetness. They're good students. They're good boys, thanks to my wife, who does all the heavy lifting. But it's amazing to think that they were like little rascals, and now they're big, strong 13-year-old boys.
We're so pleased to be joined by Damon Hack of Golf Channel here on Musings on Golf. Okay, so Damon, let's get to some background. Bachelor's degree in history at UCLA. Then you got your master's in journalism at Cal Berkeley. You know, you talked about your triplets, now 13, and the fun that they're having in sports. Wondering for you, did you play a lot of sports as a kid? And also kind of a secondary question, was sports writing a goal, or being involved in sports, a goal that you always had?
Yeah, I grew up playing everything, soccer, little league baseball, basketball. Golf didn't come until I was an adult in graduate school, but I always was around sports and I watched sports and I rooted for the Lakers with Magic and Fernando Valenzuela, the Dodgers. I mean, think about the, you know, Marcus Allen on the Los Angeles Raiders. So as a kid growing up, and you had these incredible announcers like Vin Scully on Dodger games and Chick Hearn on Laker games. Those two men in particular were guys I wanted to be like. I used to turn down the radio and pretend I was doing play-by-play. I'd have the TV on, you know, and I'd pretend I was doing the play-by-play. So I kind of fell in love with broadcast before writing. And I did some internships for KLA Radio, which was a sports station at UCLA, and then KMPC, which was a sports station in greater Los Angeles. And when I went to grad school for journalism in Berkeley, that's where I kind of fell into the writing. So I kind of went, you know, radio broadcaster in college and, you know, being a guy who booked guests for sports shows in Los Angeles. Grad school is where I discovered writing and really started to read a lot and discover the beauty of sports writing and golf writing. And then from there, I went to, you know, sports internships at the Sacramento Bee and Fresno Bee, and it was writing. And, you know, then I got to Newsday and the New York Times and Sports Illustrated. But it's funny, now that I'm a broadcaster at Golf Channel at NBC, it's almost like full circle for me. So I had done it as a college kid a little bit, but the great teams in Los Angeles, they really inspired me to want to be involved in sports. I tried to walk on to UCLA my sophomore year, got cut deep into the process, knew I wasn't going to end up playing for the Lakers. So I hit the books a little harder and made sure I at least had a career in sports, if not a statue in the NBA Hall of Fame.
Yeah, hey, elaborate a bit on the effort to walk on at UCLA. I think I've heard this story before. You almost made it, right? You almost had an opportunity to play for the Bruins, right?
Yeah, I made it to the final 5-on-5 game, you know, 10 players. And that's when they brought out the head coach, Jim Herrick. And I'll never forget, he had this big, full-on blue and yellow sweatsuit. You know, the assistant coaches had been grinding with us for most of the morning. And then for the final cut, here comes the head coach, and he kind of sashays onto the court at the John Wooden Center, which is right next door to Pauley Pavilion. And we had a 5-on-5 game. And truth be told, I didn't play that well. I thought I'd shot pretty well in the drills and made, you know, survive the first few cuts. But for the final cut, I didn't play as well as I probably needed to. They took three of the final 10, Chris Kinney, Dave Paulsell, and Lou Ritchie. I still remember the names all these years later. I mean, we're talking 30-some years ago. And I'll never forget the three guys that beat me out. It was a shooting guard. My handle wasn't good enough. I think I was kind of one-dimensional. I could shoot, but I couldn't get open as easily as I could in high school. And my left hand probably wasn't good enough to handle the rigors of then Pac-10 basketball. Might have been a decent bench player. Wasn't going to be a superstar. But it was still, you know, quite a cool thing to just make a few cuts and go all the way down to the final 5-on-5 game. But didn't at all damper my love of sports, and if anything, made me want to be involved in a life of sports by hook or by crook.
Let me share my basketball story with you, Damon Hack. You're not going to be proud, but I'll share it anyway. As a senior in high school, we had a big rivalry game coming up that night. And our coach said, I want everybody at lunchtime to shoot 25 foul shots.
Yeah.
So I go down there. I make the first 25. I make the next 10. I make the next 10. Now I'm at 55 in a row. I make 56. And I miss on 57. But the coach says, great job. You're all set. I went into the game that night and then went 0 for 12 from the foul line.
No way.
That's called leaving your game at home.
That's right. Pitching your game in the bullpen, right, instead of on the field. But, Bob, you always had great height. I mean, you were always, you got the pipes. You've always had the great voice, but you also had the size. I mean, we could see you coming and we could hear you coming on those PGA Tour Sundays, buddy.
Oh, it was so much fun with you out there and the guys out there. I've said this often to Kelly. It really was like one big family out there. It wasn't this gigantic circus that people think it was. It was quite tight-knit, and we all enjoyed working together. And why not? You get to work next to Damon Hack. Come on, Kelly. You'd love that opportunity.
Absolutely. Oh, no question. Yeah, it's good. You know, I was very fortunate. Damon moderated press conferences during the PGA Championship and Ryder Cup and got to know a lot of the guys. And it's true, Bob, that camaraderie and that fellowship, right? Yeah, you're competing in a way, Damon, but you see each other all the time, right?
Oh, 100%.
You go to dinner, you socialize, etc. It's a huge part of your life.
You walk into the press dining, and there's Bob and Janice over there, and there's Doug Ferguson's there, and maybe Larry Dorman's over there, and the late great Tim Rosefort and Jaime Diaz. You're right. I mean, it's like Mark Catanzaro and Hank Gola and Jeff Williams and Art Spander. I mean, you talk about the names of great writers and reporters, and you're right. You're competing for sure. Everyone's writing, wanting to write great stories or do great interviews and have good relationships with the players. But you see the same people and the same tournament directors and PR folks with the PGA and communications directors. You know, Julius Mason, for example. I mean, you're right. It becomes a bit of a family, and you get close, and you have the same challenges and you know, frustrations at times and joys as well.
Damon mentioned Julius Mason. We want to congratulate him. He just won the Dave Anderson Award.
Yeah.
And Damon knew Dave Anderson very well. I mean, no classier guy, no more talented guy than Dave Anderson. So congratulations, Mr. Mason. You win the Dave Anderson Award. You've done something good.
Wonderful night at Braeburn for the Met Golf Writers dinner, and Julius was as classy as he'd always been. And you're right, Dave Anderson, one of the great mentors that I was lucky enough to work with and sit next to when I was at the New York Times. And, you know, we'd be at the Masters together, and he would tell stories. And I'll never forget one of the best pieces of advice he gave me early on when I was at the Times. I was trying to figure out what I should write about, and should I focus on this story or that story? And Dave pulls me close and says, always write the quarterback. And I go, oh, okay, because he loved to write about Phil Simms or Tiger Woods. You know, he wants to write the big story. You know, always write the quarterback. I just thought it was a great, great line. Whatever it was, Muhammad Ali, Jack Nicklaus, he always wanted to write the big-time player. And if you had the grace, and you're talking about a Pulitzer Prize winner in the late, great Dave Anderson.
Well, and I want to add on, just for those who may not know, they may have heard the name Julius Mason. Julius was my boss at the PGA of America. Julius has now been there for 30 years. And let me tell you something. I'd be surprised if you disagree with me. There's no better PR communications guy in sports than Julius Mason. And he has been the confidant to many Ryder Cup captains through the years. The PGA of America has had great success in developing relationships, Damon, which you know how important those are with the tour players. And Julius Mason has had a massive amount to do with that.
All about relationships and communication and availability. And I don't think I've ever seen him have a bad day. Just he walked in there and just, you know, a smoothness about him, a grace about him, but also just an optimism about him as well. And, you know, whether it was a great PGA championship dinner during a Masters tournament, bringing people together to say, hey, we're here for this, you know, first major of the year, but, you know, don't forget about us coming up next month if it's in May or at the end of the year in August. And yeah, he's just a well-deserved winner of the Dave Anderson Award at the Met Golf Writers Dinner. It's been one of the great standout guys in the business.
Hey, Damon, what if you talk a little bit? You referenced your time covering the Niners. You covered the Knicks, Sports Illustrated, New York Times, Newsday, Sacramento Bee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a story that you wrote or another story from those years, whether it was a personality story, a game story, what have you, that stands out for you that you say, wow, that was a really cool story I wrote. What a very cool moment that was.
I went to the New York Times, would have been 2002, to cover the NFL. I covered golf for Newsday, and my first assignment was to write about Drew Bledsoe, who had just gotten traded to the Bills from the Patriots, and he'd, you know, been replaced by Tom Brady, and you're talking about a number one pick, Washington State alum, who he was one of, at the time was one of the best quarterbacks in the league, who got hurt. Mo Lewis hits him, shears a blood vessel in his lung, you know, I was flown to Buffalo to do a feature on him and kind of this new life. And he was so open about the injury and how scared he was and how scared his wife was and the ambulance ride and the pride that he had as an athlete. And he told me, you know, I've won a Super Bowl with the Patriots. I didn't get to play in the game. You know, Tom Brady played in the game, beat the Rams, but I'm going to be just as proud when we win one here. And he never did win one with the Bills, and he still had a wonderful career, but it kind of gave me some insight into athletes and the empathy that I feel like as a communicator you have to have, and that sometimes these guys and gals get their heart broken. You know, they deal with physical pain, especially when I cover the NFL, concussions and different things, and they also just get their heart broken, their souls crushed. They lose a game, they miss a putt. And it taught me that these guys and gals are putting their you know, livelihoods on the line, their pride on the line, and the sacrifice. And think about what he passes Drew Bledsoe had thrown since he was 8 years old, 12 years old, you know, All-American in college, number one pick, and trying to start this new life in Buffalo. So that was one of my first, either my first or second story that I ever wrote at the Times, and it remained one that I was very proud of. I mean, I loved covering Tiger. Covered his 05 win for the Times at the Masters when he chipped in to beat DeMarco and then went to the St. Andrews and won in St. Andrews again after doing it in 2000. Always loved writing about Tiger, and that never got old. But something about that Bledsoe story, it just stays with me to this day. I've seen him from time to time. He loves golf, and I've told him that how much I enjoyed that time that he opened up to me about how disappointed he was in his Patriots finish, but how excited he was about his future. And I just thought it was kind of a capsule of what sports can be about, some great highs and some tough lows as well.
I'm just enjoying listening to somebody that I call a friend. And I'm talking about a long-term friend. And long before he was big time, I'm amazed that he even recognized me. I wanted to send him a little introductory letter, but I know my man Damon. It's such a treat to be joined by you here on Musings on Golf, Damon. You've enjoyed covering sports we know. The ones that you have covered, the Winter and Summer Olympics, are they the most special to you?
Yeah, almost, Bob, because those are the athletes that you don't know much about for the most part. I mean, there's always going to be the Simone Biles story or Michael Phelps, but you also get these stories of these athletes from different countries. Maybe they're the only athlete representing an entire nation to be in the games. I covered biathlon in 2018, which is this combination of rifle shooting and cross-country skiing, and I was interviewing athletes from Germany and Norway and France and I was freezing my tuchus off, you know, trying to grab a hot tea while covering these games in Pyeongchang in the mountains on the South Korean-North Korean border. And this rink was kind of made over a golf course. It was like ice and snow that covered a golf course and was made into this incredible biathlon track. But I found the athletes just so thankful for the attention. You know, it's one thing if you're like covering LeBron James and Steph Curry, they're going to have a lot of microphones, you know, at a Paris Olympics as they did. But I found that the biathletes, these incredible athletes, were really, really appreciative of the coverage. And quick story, I got back from that Olympics and covered Bay Hill. And I was actually chatting with Tiger. We were walking between, you guys know Bay Hill, after the ninth hole, they have to walk across the range to make it to 10 as they make the turn. And I said, hey, Tiger, I just got back from, you know, South Korea covering biathlon. And he was totally like into the sport. Like, oh, yeah, what's their fitness level like? And I was like, oh, man, these guys are unbelievable. I said, I met this woman, Laura Dahlmeier. She won gold for Germany. She used to hike in the Himalayas and the Alps to kind of add to her mental toughness. And she said, if I can climb mountains and take on some challenges and risks, I'll be mentally strong for biathlon. Now, you can imagine Tiger, one of the most mentally tough athletes of all time. He loved that story. He loved hearing about these athletes and their training regimens and the guns and how they would have to study their heartbeat and their breathing from some 50, you know, feet away. And it was cool. It was one of those cool things where I covered a sport that not a lot of people know about, but here was Tiger Woods, the greatest golfer of this generation, who was totally fascinated by the mental toughness that these athletes in this completely different endeavor were showing.
Damon, I want to get it back to Kelly in just a moment, but all this Olympic talk, and if I don't tell my story, I'm going to be mad. You know the name Sergei Bubka?
Yes.
His grandfather, my grandfather were brothers, so we're cousins. I was in Madison Square Garden, and arrangements were made for me to interview Sergei. So
wow.
We start the interview. He speaks limited English. His brother was there, spoke better English. But I say, thank you, Sergei, for doing this. Damon, he starts laughing like crazy. I said, something wrong, Sergei? He said, yes, I've been interviewed all over the world, but never by a Bubka.
That's a great story.
From one Bubka to another.
There we go. I didn't know you were related. That is incredible. I remember that name when I was a kid. Sergei Bubka.
One of the incredible. Best.
Love it.
Now we're winding down. Damon, you've been terrific. You're a big wine guy. I'm doing some research. Do you still have your website going and talking to what goats and grapes? Is that right?
Goatsandgrapes.net. I do have it. I posted the other day. I think I had a great wine from, yes, Goldschmidt. Nick Goldschmidt is a New Zealander who makes great grapes in the Napa Valley. And I've been fortunate to interview a lot of people, as you know, in the golf space, Christy Kerr, Drew Bledsoe, speaking of which, we're in touch in part because he has his own winery in Washington called
right.
Double Back, which after his NFL career ended, he started growing grapes in Washington State and really good ones. It's funny, as we get older, I don't know if you guys would agree, you don't recover as easily from a glass of wine. So I have to pace myself. I don't drink nearly as much as I used to, but I still post pictures and still write about the intersection between sports and wine, just because so many athletes across sports, whether it's Danica Patrick, who's gotten into wine, obviously Ernie Els, Luke Donald,
oh, yeah.
It's just so many different people have dabbled in winemaking.
Okay, are you partial to whites or reds, or does it depend on if you're going to have a good steak, you got to have a red type of thing?
Yeah, it's funny. We had my wife made steak last night, and I had a Christy Kerr 2019 Sonoma Pinot Noir, which was fantastic. Yeah. My wife, she drinks almost exclusively white and rosé. She did have a Pinot Noir. She thinks that Cabernet Sauvignon is kind of heavy and bold, and it kind of is. I'd say 95% for me, it's red wine over white.
I'm with you on that. Hey, just two more questions. You mentioned about taking up golf later in life, or at least after college, et cetera. How often do you play? What do you play to? And it are you with three growing boys and a lot of their activities, are you still able to go out and play some?
Yeah, you know, one of my three boys is really into golf. So I take him out, I would say, 5-6 times a year. We've played up in Connecticut where we live. We played down in Florida where they play tennis. One of the dirty secrets of golf shows, we don't get to play as much. I probably have played 8 times in 2024. It's just, you know, with between the boys and their schedule, I don't get to play as much. I'm a 16 handicap, and I can say that I just recently won the inaugural Bushwood Cup at Ridgewood Country Club in New Jersey, hosted by Sam Flood, one of our VP executive bigwigs here at NBC, had us out to the club. I made a 30-foot birdie on 17 of center 8, and I made a 12-foot left-to-right bogey save, which was worth a par, and we ended up winning at a Magic Card. So I did bring home a trophy recently, but like all of us, I don't get to play nearly as much as I would like.
Good. Coming up in the clutch had to feel extra special, right?
It'll have to carry me to 2025 because I'm running out of days to play.
I hear you. Hey, before Bob wraps up, we've asked this question now of a lot of our guests. It's kind of become a staple of our show, Damon, and it's elicited some really neat responses in a variety of ways. And it's very simple. If you could round out a dream foursome, if you could have three other players, and it may be your boys right now, but if you could have your three other players, whether those individuals are living or deceased, who would those three be, and where would you play the round?
Wow, that's a great question. Since I have my boys and have played with them, I'm going to enjoy that while I can. But the ultimate dream foursome for me would be Tiger Woods. It would be Irvin Magic Johnson. It would be my late father, who was a huge fan of both. And it would be just neat to, my dad didn't play golf. He told me he played golf one time. He was in his buddy's backyard, and his buddy had like a pitching wedge, and my dad hit some chip shots, but the game never took. He never really followed up on that. But he loved watching Tiger play. I was a huge Magic Johnson fan, and my dad loved the Lakers also. So never got to play golf with my late dad, but if he was here and we could get Tiger and Magic for 18 holes, both my dad and I would like nerd out and would love every solitary step that we took on a warm afternoon somewhere.
Where would you play?
We'd probably play in LA. You know, Magic was so great. I know Magic's from Michigan. I went to Michigan State, but I'm from L.A., Tiger's from L.A., my dad from L.A. I would say, you know, maybe Riviera, since Tiger hadn't won at Riviera, he'd win at Riviera against me and my dad at Magic, so maybe we get Tiger his first win at Riv.
That's great.
That's funny.
Great. Robert?
Well, I've been racking my brain. What can I do to thank Damon Hack for the time that he's given Musings on Golf? It's been a sheer delight to talk to you. And the best I can come up with, Damon, I hope you like it. Go LA Dodgers.
I will take it, Bob. That is as good as a thank you as I could ask for. I think we'd have our hands full with Aaron Judge. But I tell you what, to think about the greatness of those two franchises and having them go head-to-head, we're going to need as much help as we can. It's two great, proud franchises with roots in New York going toe-to-toe. May it go 7, and may my Dodgers somehow find a way to defeat the New York Yankees.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Bob, I thought his stories about covering the Olympics, the one about covering the Winter Games and the frigid air of in Korea. He's a great, Damon Hack's a great storyteller. I don't care whether it's the warmth of a U.S. Open in June, or the frigid cold of the mountains in Korea covering a sport in the biathlon. He's really good at telling great stories.
Well, he's really talented, whether he's writing the stories or telling the stories. That's why they call him Damon Hack.
Well, and, you know, I don't want to, before we talked a little bit about this promotion, I also want to congratulate JT Poston, who's really one of the really good putters on the PGA Tour, Bob. His third win over the weekend at the Shriners Children's Open in Las Vegas. The reason I brought up Tim O'Neill is I just think, you know, sometimes we don't focus as much on the PGA Tour champions, and it's pretty much their playoffs right now. And to see a story like that when it really mattered for a guy who really needed to come through, it gets him his tour card for the PGA Tour champions for next year. As I said, takes him to the second round of the playoffs. Some wins are bigger than others, Bob.
They really are. And some wins are more deserving, Kelly. And I can't think of a more deserving win than by Tim's victory. Congratulations, Tim. Job well done from Musings on Golf.
Yeah, and opportunity for our listeners who've been, you know, fortunate to hear from some great people having to do with their dream foursome. We have an opportunity for you all now. Simply go to the Musings on Golf podcast page on either Facebook or Instagram. Submit your, and you're going to see a couple of examples of some of those we've interviewed and what they said. There's a great interview answer from Scott Van Pelt, another one from Steve Sands. We're going to ask you then to just submit who would be in your dream foursome, who would round it out, the three players, and where you would play. You have until next Monday to submit. Next week, Bob and I will have picked a random winner, and we're going to read, Bob, you and I are going to read a few of those on the air. I have a feeling we're going to hear some really touching personal stories.
I'm sure we will. That's because we have the best listeners in the golf world. If you're a golfer, you listen to Musings on Golf.
Absolutely. Again, go to the Musings on Golf podcast, either Facebook or Instagram. Tell us your great stories. Kelly Elbin signing off on Musings on Golf with Bob Bupka. Bob, enjoy the rest of the week. It's great being with you and with Mr. Hack.